in my career as a banker, you often heard people talking about time is money. In the global health world, time is lives. I'm Peter Sands. I'm the executive director of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In today's program, why this health crisis took economists by surprise and why they need to prepare for the next one.
Has the COVID-19 pandemic impacted the world's ability and attention on these other diseases?
COVID has been the worst thing that has ever happened to the fight against HIV, TB, and malaria.
So if it wasn't clear why international financial institutions should care about global health before, it certainly is now. In fact, the IMF recently established a Global Health and Pandemic Response Task Force to enhance the fund's contributions to fight COVID-19. IMF economist Ruchir Agarwal heads that task force and sat down with Peter Sands to discuss the role of macroeconomics in public health preparedness.
Peter, thank you for joining us, and we are very happy to have this conversation with you. Before we start, perhaps a bit of a personal perspective. As we understand, before working at the Global Fund, you were in banking. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got interested in global health.
Well, you have to go back a bit further, right back to when I left school, when I couldn't make up my mind whether I wanted to be a doctor or whether I wanted to be an economist. And so I sent applications to universities for both. I ended up choosing to do economics, but I never lost that interest in health and specifically in global health. And while I was CEO of Standard Chartered, the international bank, I was also active on a kind of pro bono basis on various boards and things around global health. And then when I stepped down from being the chief executive, I was in that role for 9 years, I went back to Harvard. And one of the things I focused my attention on was the whole issue of the interaction between finance and economics, which by that time I understood a bit about, and global health, which I felt was a kind of dysfunctional relationship. And that's how I started getting really my teeth into the topics I'm now wrestling with in the role I've got now.
And now, very early on during the pandemic, you wrote a piece called When Finance Fails. And in that, you raised the question, why economists didn't see the COVID-19 collapse coming. Could you tell us a little bit about why you think that was the case?
Well, this was a question I was kind of interested in. After I left Standard Chartered, I went and spent some time at Harvard and did some work looking at the kind of economics and finance of global health, and particularly around pandemics. And one of the things I was fascinated by is why no one in the financial or economic world, including the IMF, seemed to take the risk of these outbreaks happening seriously. And I did a little bit of sort of evidencing of this. I looked at 15 countries that had infectious disease outbreaks and looked at the IMF and S&P and EIU reports 2 years before, 2 years after. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting of the IMF ones is I think it was something like 63% of the time the IMF had come to the conclusion that these outbreaks were macrocritical, that they were relevant to talk about in the reports afterwards. However, if I looked at the reports before, there was not a single one that ever mentioned. And this is not unique to the IMF. It was also true of S&P and EIU. And there just seemed to be this blind spot. And I think, well, what causes this this sort of problem? Well, one is typically humans, and I don't think economists are immune to being humans, are not very good at estimating low probability, high impact events, right? We either exaggerate them or we ignore them. We find it very difficult to take a measured approach to them. But also, I think there is a sort of phenomenon of we examine the risks where we feel we understand. And my sense was that institutions like the IMF didn't feel comfortable dealing with issues around epidemiology and zoonotic spillover, and therefore, in a sense, didn't look at those. And it was much better to look at risks around, you know, liquidity crunches and commodity prices and all that kind of stuff. And underneath all of this, it was the kind of chasm of understanding between the worlds of health and economics, both highly specialized, highly technical worlds, but with people who didn't really know how to speak each other's language.
Right. And in this context, talking about the blind spots, not only did you identify these blind spots in these reports, but as I understand, you tried to encourage the IMF to do something about the blind spot ahead of the next health crisis. Could you, as you know very well, the IMF is a largely a macroeconomic-based institution. What unique perspective, according to you, can the IMF bring to these questions, to these issues of blind spots ahead of time?
Well, the argument I used, and let's be clear, this was back in 2016, 2017, and second point is I was completely unsuccessful in making these arguments. But the argument I was making was that these diseases, these outbreaks, are things that are happening all the time in minor ways, and every now and then one surges, as we've seen with COVID, and becomes much more impactful. But they're susceptible to analysis. Mm-hmm. And also countries' ability to deal with them, in the same way that countries' ability to deal with things like liquidity shocks, is susceptible to analysis. And further, that countries' vulnerability, depending upon the sectoral makeup of the economy, is also susceptible to analysis. And so that one could actually say, how vulnerable is a country to the probability of an infectious disease event that is macro-critical? Mm. And while I didn't think that the IMF was going to be the source of the information on the epidemiological side, it could draw on others for that. The translation of that into how it could affect the economy involves a set of skills and capacities, which is absolutely the core strength of the IMF.
Right. And in your experience, the way the COVID-19 crisis, let's say, has evolved, do you think that has changed an appreciation of exactly that macro-critical aspects of health? And are you more optimistic about the institutions like the IMF reports going forward, giving more space and attention to these issues?
Well, if macroeconomic and large financial institutions haven't worked out that infectious diseases can have massive macro and financial effects as a result of COVID, then I don't know what it is that is going to convince them.
Right.
I mean, it's obvious that actually it's been a bigger event than the global financial crisis. Clearly, the reality of it has revealed dimensions of how the sort of transmission between disease and the economy works, which we wouldn't have predicted. Who wins and who loses and all that sort of stuff. There's been some surprises in that. But I don't think anybody can now stand up and say, if I'm going to assess future economic risks, I can ignore the threat of a potential pandemic.
So, and exactly, so since we started to talk about the current pandemic, COVID-19 crisis, you and your team at Global Fund are playing an important role in fighting the crisis. Could you perhaps tell us a little bit about, from your vantage point, what are the key priorities that needs to happen in the near term to save lives and support a broad-based economic recovery, as you've highlighted?
Well, the first thing, just to give a bit of context, the Global Fund is an organization that was set up to fight the last big pandemic to strike humanity, HIV/AIDS, a disease that has killed, you know, nearly 40 million people by now. And that is our core strength, is fighting the biggest infectious diseases. We responded to the COVID crisis very quickly, making money available in March 2020. Since then, we've deployed about $4 billion. And essentially, the Global Fund has been the primary provider of support to low and middle income countries for all the non-vaccine elements of the response. So tests, treatment, PPE, oxygen, health systems, enhancements, and so on. So COVAX does vaccines. We do everything else. What do we need to do to beat this? Well, we need to go bigger and faster. The logic of infectious diseases is, of fighting infectious diseases, is you need to hit them very fast because you have a non-linear impact both on beating them, but there's also, as we have seen with COVID, a non-linear impact if you let them run rampant. And we are not actually doing as much as we should be. And we are also somewhat guilty of having a bit of a lopsided response. Vaccines are our most potent weapon, but used alone, vaccines will not defeat COVID on their own. We need a more comprehensive response encompassing the other elements.
So bigger, faster, and a more comprehensive response, not just the vaccine-only approach.
Absolutely, yeah.
In terms, you also spoke in your response now about the origins of the Global Fund set up to fight HIV crisis, and also you focus a lot on malaria, TB. Has the COVID-19 pandemic impacted the world's ability and attention on these other diseases?
COVID has been the worst thing that has ever happened to the fight against HIV, TB, and malaria. We just published our results report for 2020. And for the first time in the 20-year history of the Global Fund, we had reverses in key results across all three diseases. And to put this in perspective, in most low and low middle income countries, HIV, TB, and malaria are killing more people than COVID is. This is not a competition. We should be wanting any of them to win. We need to have a response that both deals with the direct impact of COVID, but also its knock-on impact on these other diseases.
Right. And so in this context, you spoke earlier about a need for a comprehensive response. Could COVID-19 itself be a catalyst in garnering support to look at global health, not just as a disease-by-disease approach, but a comprehensive approach across the broad spectrum?
I think there are a lot of lessons coming out of COVID-19. One is exactly that, that it doesn't make sense to focus simply on one pathogen, but you need to protect people from the whole slew of different pathogens that are attacking them. It makes no sense to save someone from COVID only to find that they die of TB. But that's just one of the lessons. Another lesson is the value of taking a really end-to-end perspective, of having the people like me who are involved in the deployment of new medical tools, talking and working with the people who are developing and launching them. I think a third thing, and this would be familiar to people in the financial world, is the value of time, of speed. In my career as a banker, you often heard people talking about time is money. In the global health world, time is lives, but the global health world doesn't tend to work like that. It has quite kind of measured ways of operating. And we have moved things at unprecedented pace in responding to COVID. We should translate some of that urgency into the way we respond to the other diseases that we are fighting.
Right. And perhaps before you go looking ahead, you know, in recent days, we've gotten good news on the approval of a malaria vaccine. Are there other areas where you are optimistic about? What should we be looking forward to in the months ahead or years ahead, let's say?
Well, I think the experience with COVID, where we have broken the assumptions around how long it takes to develop a vaccine, develop a rapid diagnostic test, and so on, is challenging established expectations about how long it takes to develop vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics in other arenas for these other diseases as well. The approval of RTSS, the new malaria vaccine, this has been years in the coming, and the Global Fund has put money into the development of RTSS. But I could also talk about other examples. For example, TB, we've been talking, and people in the TB world have been excited about the fact that there might be a vaccine within 4 to 5 years. Mm. I've been saying, well, hang on, if we could develop a vaccine for a virus we'd never seen before in a year, why are we excited about 4 to 5 years for a disease that we've had for hundreds of years? And I think we need a different sense of urgency around these existing diseases and some of the ways that we use to expedite the development and regulatory approval and launch processes we've seen in COVID. We should be using them again.
Peter Sands of the Global Fund, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you, Richard.
That was Peter Sands, the Executive Director of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria, speaking with Ruchir Agarwal, who heads the IMF Global Health and Pandemic Response Task Force, about how economists can better prepare for global health crises. You'll find this interview, as well as many other health-related articles, in the December 2021 edition of Finance and Development, which focuses on world health and well-being. Check it out at imf.org/FND or download the Finance and Development app. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.